Okay, so we were just going to talk about the reason, really, you came to the governor's house in Gibraltar after you'd been wounded. So
yes.
Maybe you could talk a little about that.
In 1961, I was wounded and went over a landmine, and on patrol in Muscat on the Persian Gulf. We were working in cooperation with the Sultan's armed forces there. And after a spell in hospital in England, in London, I was sent on sick leave before going to Headley Court. And Gibraltar was the place because I had no other home to go to. And it was the most perfect place to recuperate with the sun and the sea. One of the things that struck me when I was in hospital in London was the incredible kindness and generosity of the Gibraltarian people. Sir Edward Cottrell, who ran a wine business in Gibraltar, sent me a box of half bottles of champagne to drink every morning to speed my recovery in Millbank Military Hospital in London, which I was enormously grateful for, not only for the wine itself, but also for the kind thought behind it, really. Otherwise, in Gibraltar itself, we sailed a lot, which was the chief pastime there, in the splendid little Victory boats.
What were they, the Victory boats?
A Victory was a rarely an X-class, a Bembridge X-class wooden boat, sailing boat. You get a couple of people in it, and they were raced round the bay. They were a very successful class. They managed to cope with really almost any weather that was put to us in Gibraltar. It was an exciting little boat to sail, and had a spinnaker and other things like that, and was fun. My father had two while he was there, and the second he called Alitia, which was the name of the nun who was supposedly walled up in the convent in Gibraltar in Government House, and had been seen as a ghost by a number of governors' children and governors' families over the years. I think General Macmillan of Macmillan, being a Scot, was one of the governors who saw the most of her, probably, being rather fey.
Any of your family saw her?
Never, no. Although it was a good story, but I don't know whether or not the any alterations to the convent had been made, which had altered her walk since we were there. But certainly she never put in an appearance, no.
But she definitely, that was her fate, was it? She was walled up.
So I believe, yes, there was a legend that she had been in the convent when it was a convent, and she had tried to make off with some nobleman, and he'd been caught at the quayside. He had been pushed into the water, and she had disappeared, and nobody knew where she was. And indeed, the remains of a rather slight female figure had been found in a grave beneath the floors of the back of the, at the back of the chapel in the convent.
Gosh, so when that's there is some truth to it then, isn't it?
Well, there must have been some...
Nuns are always being walled up in one way or another. I went to a convent and there were lots of stories about nuns being walled up, but if they actually found some bones, it's probably, you know...
I think there was some truth that something had happened, certainly, and her name certainly was always on people's lips when they walked around the convent.
It would be lovely, actually, if you could walk me round the convent and what it was like then, what you could remember of the building.
Yes, it was a stone-faced building as you came to it, and at that time it was guarded by two infantrymen who protected us in the front door, and you went through into what had probably been a Victorian facade, but into the much older building, where there were a broad staircase leading up to broad walkways round a courtyard. At one side, a ballroom had been built on later, and this had been rather damaged when the ammunition ship exploded in the 40s. But it was still used, and when the Princess Royal came to visit us, we used it for receptions. But on the other side were the main dining room and drawing room, and from there there was a new wing, which had been built by General Napier of Magdala when he was there, and that led out to where my parents' private rooms were, little sitting room, bedroom, and so on now.
Oh, that's really good. Thank you very much. Oh, it's very nice having a description of the interior, because people who will know it will enjoy that. So for you, obviously, you were recuperating from being wounded, so it was a social occasion for you, really.
Yes. I mean, there was quite a lot of exercise that I had to do in the way of swimming and that sort of thing, but one had a number of friends who used to come out and stay, which was fun, and they loved coming, quite apart from the climate, which was super.
What time of year was it then? Was it in the summer? Can you remember?
This was in the spring that I went out, that I went there to recuperate for 3 months of February, March and April, which is not a terribly pleasant time in this country.
No, very well timed, yeah. And where did you swim? Did you swim at Rosia?
At Rosia Bay, and also we used to go onto the Spanish mainland and swim off Marbella. Alfonso Hernlow had just opened his club at Marbella with Princess Ira, who he had married the previous year, and they used to be our hosts on some days. There was supposedly a governor's beach and a governor's bathing hut off Marbella, but all we had was key to the bathing hut, and the bathing hut we could never actually find, so I think that probably disappeared into the mists of history. Otherwise we went up onto the Atlantic coast towards Jerez, and we used to swim off just north of Cadiz. There's some good beaches there.
Very windy, I remember, north of Cadiz. It's quite wild weather, isn't it?
Very cold, the water was. Yes.
Yeah, the Atlantic.
Yes.
So you did, I mean, it was obviously part of the life to go backwards and forwards to Spain a great deal.
Indeed it was. There's a delightful proprietor of the Queen's Hotel, Jaime Russo, who had been in the Third Hussars during the war, and he was incredibly generous, and he used to take me up to bullfights in Spain. My parents were not keen on the bullfighting scene particularly. My father, as a cavalryman, found the whole business with the horses a bit much, really. But Jaime used to take me up, and it was the time when we had Alfonso Ordóñez and Luis Miguel Domiquin, who were the two absolutely peerless bullfighters vying with one another. And it was a very exciting business. Besides which, with my parents, we often went up to the sherry bodegas. Guy Williams of Williams and Humbert was very kind. He used to invite us up there. And Beltran Domecq of Domecq, the Domecq house as well, who in fact was married to Guy's daughter. He used to be very kind and entertain us there. And we had enormous fun, and we visited there the bull farms, which my parents were very happy to go and see, and the young bulls being raised and the mothers being tested to see if they were fierce and their children would be good for the ring.
Gosh, it's extraordinary, isn't it? I mean, and I just thinking about when you were talking about Marbella, presumably that was well before it became sort of Costa del Crime, or just before it became Costa del Crime.
I don't think there was any crime then at all.
But you know how all the, you know, the London villains moving to Marbella, I mean, it wasn't like that then.
It wasn't built up at all, no. In fact, the Marbella Club, the Hernlow's Club, was one of the first of the sort of new builds, and I think that a number of his friends came out and built villas, and then people got that idea and they began building up. I know they were very worried about the whole water situation at that stage, because the water coming into Marbella actually badly supported the indigenous fishermen's families there as it was.
I mean, that is interesting, isn't it? Because I suppose that whole coast, which is now so built up, was just fishing villages, really.
It was a chain of fishing villages, yes. It was delightful. There was the occasional pub, which had been put up by one or two people from Gibraltar. But other than that, completely Spanish and totally undeveloped for tourism at all. Mm.
Very lucky to have gone there at that time, to have seen that, because it's so... Well, never be again, will it?
It certainly was beautiful, and the Sierra Nevada behind it were absolutely lovely, too. Of course, it was the development of Malaga Airport into a major airport which made the difference, which allowed people some way to come in, because up until then, the communications through Spain were very poor. My great-aunt came down by train, and she, because she did not like flying, and... she was derailed three times on the way down. I don't think it was very serious. I think they popped it back on the rails and off they went. But it was an indicator of what the communications were like there.
Yeah, a bit of an epic journey, really, I would imagine.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, how interesting. Really interesting. So what about the relationship with the Spanish, then, between Gibraltar and the Spanish at that point?
Well, of course, at that time, with the dockyard open... a huge number of Spanish workers used to come across every day to work. So they viewed Gibraltar from that point of view as the goose that was laying the golden eggs. It was only when I think the Spanish government felt that they needed an exterior alien dynamic that they would think, well, I think we will play the Gibraltar card now and make life difficult for the Gibraltarians and ourselves there. We had a very good relationship with the embassy in Madrid. Peter Hope, who was the first secretary there, kept in very close touch. A brilliant man, known as Esperanza to the Spaniards, of course, and who later went on to be an ambassador in Mexico. And they were very helpful in conveying our feelings to the Spaniards and saying that we felt that the borders should be kept open for the two-way traffic of ourselves and their own workers. But nonetheless, the border was closed for extended periods while we were there, and that was a hardship for both sides, really, for the Spaniards in the Campo area and for the Gibraltarians, although the Gibraltarians could, of course, move away by sea and go to other places. But the... one of the relationships which my father was able personally to work on was that of his relationship with the governor of the Campo area, who was General Robles.
What do you call the Campo? What is the Campo area?
Campo area was the Spanish mainland, which went back a certain distance into Spain and which was a Spanish administrative area, rather like a... county or
like Andalusia or something like
that. It was part of Andalusia, yes. It was a considerable chunk of it, in fact. But yes, it was in there, more a subdivision, I suspect, of Andalusia. And it had a governor who was quite an influential chap. He was quite an important chap in the Spanish hierarchy. And it was important that we had an official visit from the governor of Gibraltar to him, and particularly a new governor, and he would have a return visit to Gibraltar. So came the time to go over, and clearly a launch and so on was required, because Robles' headquarters was in Algeciras, and Royal Air Force said they could produce some air sea rescue launches, and three of them to go over, and that seemed fine. And then the Royal Navy felt that they would like to help as well, and they happened to have the Dartmouth Squadron in, which was a cruiser and three destroyers at the time. And so this great fleet went over to Algeciras. Darrell Bates, who was the colonial secretary in Gibraltar at the time, said he felt it was probably the strongest naval force which had gone into Spanish territorial waters since the siege of Gibraltar. Anyway, Robles was simply delighted. It reflected enormous prestige on him, and he was frightfully pleased. He turned out a complete regiment of Spanish infantry, the other side, in their German steel helmets, for my father to inspect. And they had a thoroughly good meeting and an excellent luncheon, and then back into the boats and back to Gibraltar again.
And what were they actually meeting about? About diplomatic relations, really?
Rarely. This was just an exchange of compliments and to introduce one another to each to one another. I don't think that it had any particularly political significance other than that of sheer courtesy.
Yes, that's interesting. I mean, I was going to ask you about that. You may not have known this at all, but perhaps your father spoke about it. That, I mean, obviously we all know that, and it still goes on, that there was a lot of smuggling across the border between Spain and Gibraltar. Cigarettes are so cheap, and, you know, it's still happening. People are filling their black plastic bags and taking them over. But I just wondered if, because of the situation with the Cold War, if there were still spies in Gibraltar then, do you think?
Spies, I never heard about, really, at all. I don't think that that was a problem that any publicity was given to. Certainly, I think there was quite a lot of classified material in Gibraltar, particularly keeping an eye on the underwater waterways, because, after all, this was the time in which the Portland spies were arrested, who were dealing with just those secrets. But in Gibraltar, perhaps they just never got that far, or it was altogether too difficult to operate within. But certainly no spying that I know of ever took place. On the smuggling side, of course, there were many, many stories of smugglers going to and fro through the Spanish checkpoint. I think the current one when we were there was of the chap who used to move through every day with his bicycle, and it was taken away and searched, and he had a cup of coffee with the douanier then, and then he, or the Guardia Civil, and then he went on with his bicycle and came back. And in the end, he was going to retire, and the head of the Guardia Civil had him in and said, what are you going to do? You haven't even bought your bicycle yet. And what are you going to do now? You've retired. He said, oh, well, I'm just going to live on my savings. He said, savings? So we're sure that you've been smuggling something. What was it? And it turned out, of course, to be bicycles. So that was the current story that while we were there. But relations were good, I think, with on the ground with the individuals who lived in the Campo area and who policed the border. We have a number of friends in Campamento, which is a little village over the border, and we used to go and see them and chat to them about what was going on. There had been a polo club there which did operate now and again, depending really on the border situation, and people used to go and play polo on the fine little Spanish ponies there, which I think they had great fun with.
Well, that must have eased relations, you know, because you wanted to do some social activity, and that always, you know, is a good diplomatic thing to do, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. Yes. And the Buttes, of course, had a house over there, just the other side of Campamento, and their agent, Herr Jochel, who was a charming chap, I remember we used to go over there and have lunch with them and see him and ride their horses as well. There was considerable amount of movement that went on across the border, yes.